Happy Monday night, everybody. It's Eddie, and we've got a big group with us here. Lots of help tonight. Susan's running the boards. Susan, how are you?
Good.
Mr. Moore?
Yes, sir. President of Counter Four, how y'all doing?
Beautiful. Y'all had a great class in Tampa this weekend.
We did. Had a great class. A lot of fun.
Sounds like you had a really impressive group. Got some new recruits that I think we're excited to learn about meat. And we're going to start out tonight with three special guests, but one of them's really going to do most of the talking. So Margaret and Donica and Mike, all from National Asset Advisors, you guys welcome.
Thank you, Eddie.
We appreciate your being, we know that this is a company job for you guys, and it doesn't go unnoticed that you're starting this at 9 o'clock, and so we appreciate your doing that. And you guys have brought this is a subject, Mike, as you and I and the executive teams and all the portfolio managers and stuff, both on the Colonial side and on the National Asset Advisor side, we've spent a lot of time talking about this subject. So I think have done a really good job of pulling it together. This is going to be some deep conversation for a minute, folks. So you guys pay attention. It's really important what we're going to learn about this. And I just said this before we turn the webinar on to the staff that's kind of all involved with us here. And I told Kevin Moore, I said, I think this is a topic that most small note owners do not know. And so we thought it was subject, and NAA stepped up to the plate and prepared a presentation, and we're very grateful for that. So, Margaret, we're going to let you run with it.
Okay, great.
You ready?
I just wanted to take a moment here and go through property taxes and a lot of the questions that Donica and myself receive about property taxes on a regular basis. And on the first slide, we'll go ahead and we'll talk about some of the general ideas. There's multiple taxing authorities in some locations. A lot of places, if you're lucky, have just one, and they're due yearly. But in other areas, it can be biannually. Sometimes it's a nice even split where half the taxes are due 6 months from the other half. Sometimes it's not so simple. They can be quarterly. They can go to multiple taxing authorities, especially Pennsylvania has three different taxing authorities often. And that's why it's important that if you're going to want your servicer to pay those taxes, that you send in the funds for the taxes 30 days prior to those being due, because they can go to those different authorities. If you're paying your own taxes, go ahead and let your servicer know that and provide them a receipt. They're going to need that for record keeping and to reimburse you any portion that you may need to be reimbursed. In some areas, utilities are going to apply to delinquent taxes, delinquent utilities will apply to taxes, so you may see those liens roll onto your taxes. If you're have a current account, the taxes do need to be paid on time in order to stay in compliance with federal regulations. If the taxes are due and the funds are not available in escrow, we will ask that the investor provide funds to cover that deficiency. Escrow payments that bring the escrow back up to a $0 balance are going to be reimbursed to the investor. So you do recoup that money that you had to front to cover taxes. Positive escrow funds, however, belong to the borrower. That's their account, and those are their funds. And always bring your tax bill to your service provider or to your servicer so they can make plans to get those tax payments in on time.
All right, hold on a minute. I want to go back, if I can, Margaret. That good. So mm-hmm. So go back, Susan. I know you're clicking for Margaret here. Scroll back, and I want to go back past this slide, and I want to go to the last slide before that. Okay, Because you made a statement. Just keep clicking. It'll back you out, Susan. You made a statement there at the bottom that's really important, okay? And in the low price band real estate space and in a lot of the areas that we buy notes, you know, the Midwest, this is common. This is not how they do it in Texas. It's not how they do it maybe where you live. But Margaret, would you say maybe 15 or 20 states do it this way where they can add a delinquent water bill or a sewer bill to the taxes?
Yeah, and they can skyrocket that bill.
Yeah, and so a lot of times when you're looking at a tax bill, when you're doing due diligence on a delinquent note, and you see, wow, they got taxes of $1,000. Well, the reason they do is it's not just the property tax, but that they've rolled in the utility tax or the utility bill into the tax. So I just wanted to make that point if we can. And then Susan, I'm going to get you to roll forward for a second to the next slide, the one and then I'm going to get you to click those in. And I wanted to talk a little bit, Margaret, about some specifics here, because this is the kind of stuff that I don't think a lot of people know. So I want you to talk a little bit more about this, because we've heard this question a lot. I know you hear it, Margaret, excessively. And that is, you mean that if I have an escrow account and I have a current loan and the taxes are due and there's not enough money in the escrow account, I have to dig money out of my pocket and pay the taxes. Is that true, Margaret?
Yes. You need to take the money out of your pocket and pay the taxes, but you would be repaid as the borrower makes payments back into escrow,
right,
and brings the account up to zero.
Escrow accounts have an advantage, right? People that don't budget their money well, the escrow account lets them budget their money, okay? So I generally like having escrow accounts. I prefer to have an escrow account than not have an escrow account. But some of you guys, like, you're like, well, I don't want to pay the taxes. You know, it's kind of like if there's a shortfall in the escrow account, the servicer has to follow the law, right? I mean, NAA isn't being bad guys here, right? You guys are just following the law.
Eddie, can I say something here, please?
Yes, sir.
You know, when we talk about the taxes have to be paid, it's either pay me now or pay me later, and later is much more expensive because the penalties just keep growing on it. So if there is a shortage in escrow, it could be most likely because they're behind a couple of months. We work very hard to get them caught up, and when they are caught up, then the funds that the investor has put in to making the taxes whole will get reimbursed as that comes in. So it's not like you're losing money. You're actually avoiding paying more money by keeping them current.
And you have the right to be reimbursed, right, Mike?
That's correct. Yes.
So once again, the servicer then makes an adjustment in the amount of escrow they get, and it'll take you a year to kind of get your $800 back or whatever, but it's not a freak out thing. And I think a lot of people sometimes in this business, even with performing notes, you just kind of got to roll with it a little bit, right? It's less than a perfect business, right, Margaret?
Yeah, but if you go ahead and you pay the taxes, it generally will come back to you as that borrower starts to make their monthly payments. The money that would have gone into escrow instead comes back to you on that next statement.
All right, let's open up here, guys. If you've got questions on this, we're going to open up the question box because I want to make sure that I want to make absolutely sure that everybody is clear about some of these things. It's really important. I keep getting messages my mic's cutting out. Is my mic cutting out for you guys?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. All right, so Alan has a good question, and let me say this, Margaret. I'm going to ask you these questions, and if you're covering it better, if you're covering it better, okay, they're telling me it's cutting out. Moore, I'm going to have you jump in here, bro.
Sorry, I had you on mute.
I want you to monitor the questions, but it may be a question she's going to cover better.
Sure, hold on.
And so I just want to make sure that she's got it broke up into sections really well. And so I just want to make sure before we get past this section that there's, you know, any questions we can kind of go through. They're telling me my mic's cutting out. I'm on hardwire. Yep. I don't know why it is, but I'll
yeah. So Eddie, at this point, the one question Alan is asking is how often can an escrow amount be adjusted? And I think that's a great question. So I think you know Mike, Margaret, you guys go ahead and kind of roll through that. And there's a lot of confusion with students on that.
I believe she's going to address that in a couple of slides.
Okay, so we'll let the story play out, as we like to say.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay. Do we want to move forward in the slideshow? Here's where we're going to have more information about escrow. First, we're going to talk about what can be escrowed. It's all based on what's in the contract. Most commonly, you're going to see taxes, insurance, and in some of the areas, ground rents or utilities. It depends on what's stipulated in the agreement that we can escrow. And escrow analysis, it happens because we have to do it annually based on the anniversary of the account. We look at the date of the first payment that came in, and every year, we should be running analysis that month. And the other time we're going to look at escrow and consider doing another analysis is if we find a severe deficiency or shortage when we're paying taxes. And we don't necessarily always run escrow on the delinquent account. Sometimes it gets a little funky if escrow is always very negative and the customer is very behind. Regulation doesn't require us to do it, so on delinquent accounts, analysis is going to be less frequent. Each time we run analysis, that letter goes out to the borrower, letting them know what's changed, if their escrow payment's going to have changed, going up or going down, and if there was any type of shortage or deficiency or surplus.
Is there a minimum requirement on a federal level in terms of when you guys have to go ahead and do an escrow analysis?
Annually, based on the date of first payment.
Okay. So if the first payment payment's due June 1st of 2011, then your escrow analysis would be done no later than May of 2012. Got it.
But, you know, sometimes, like I said, we might be paying taxes in that area twice a year. So we're going to look at it. And if at one of those other payment dates, we see that there's no way that they're going to have funds available when that next tax is due, we're going to definitely go ahead and run a new analysis on the account.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Great answer. All right. Carry on.
Next, we'll talk about the shortages. And the deficiencies. Shortages are when there's funds available in the escrow, but they aren't enough to cover the upcoming payment. That's pretty straightforward. The deficiency is a little more complicated. It indicates that there is that negative balance in escrow, and you're going to run into problems when you have that because you've already got a negative balance, and you're probably also going to be short on the upcoming taxes. So you're probably going to look at an increase in your payment that's usually a little substantial. So the deficiency is a time-consuming process maybe to recoup, but you can stick with it. The borrowers can cover that deficiency and the shortage and get escrow back right, but it can take a little time. If there's extra money in escrow. That's fantastic. There's a surplus. We're going to issue it to the borrower as a refund. But if the buyer does request, we can apply that to principal or to payment. If they're delinquent, they cannot be issued a refund, but we may be able to apply the surplus funds to the delinquency on the account, which is often a nice boost for the borrowers who are behind, and they can use that surplus in escrow to catch up, and they'll still have the funds left to make the payment for taxes.
By regulation, we are allowed to keep a two-month surplus in escrow. So if we, at the end of that first year, we pay the taxes and there's a surplus, we're allowed to keep 2 months rolling forward always on that, so that there's a little bit, in case they get behind a payment or two, there is that surplus. Sometimes when a note is transferred to us, it comes in with a negative escrow. And depending on the size of that escrow, we may do an analysis at that point to try to get the ship righted as quickly as possible, but typically not until the anniversary date. So.
All right. And so quick question, because I'm getting some questions here on the board. The assumption that we are operating on the call here is these are for loans where escrows were set up at the time that the loan was done, or is this where the escrow may not have been set up and then it was added in later, guys? Just because we've got three people that have asked that question, and I think that's just good preface.
This is assuming that escrow is in place. Escrow has to be stipulated by the contract. So as long as the contract allows us to escrow, we're going to. Some contracts don't allow it, so.
All right. So to be clear, if our students are looking at purchasing a note, and if it's a note and mortgage, note and deed of trust, if in the original note it says escrow payments will be made for taxes, insurance, bing, 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 or even if it's a land contract, it is stipulated. That's the premise you guys are using right now, with all the answers you're giving us.
That's correct.
All right. So what we'll do is at the end, Mike and Margaret I'd love to leave like 5 or 10 minutes just to talk about what happens in terms of protective advances, where our students, where they buy a note and as the lender, have to go ahead and make payments on delinquent taxes. So once you guys go ahead and run through this, if we can spend 5 minutes or so on that, that'd be fabulous.
Okay.
In this next section, are we ready? Taxes with an AMX, if there's not available escrow, we're gonna open up an action ticket that's gonna state, here's the amount of the taxes that are due, here's what's available, here's the amount of money that we're going to need for you as the investor to go ahead and make the tax payment. And right there, there's an approve or deny. You can click that. It'll send a notification to our tax department, and they'll know right away that, yes, you're okay with those taxes being paid. If you have a question about the taxes, or if there's just something that's not clear to you, down at the bottom of AMX, you can create a new post to myself and to our tax department. Ask that question, and we can keep that same open thread about the tax situation and either get those paid or choose not to pay them at the time.
All right, perfect.
It's vital. Kevin, let me just add, it's very critical that if you have notes or REOs with us at NAA, that you get log into the system and check action tickets to see if anything's been forwarded to you for approval, and to provide information back to us as quickly as possible.
Okay, perfect. That makes sense. Thanks, Mike.
Hey, let me just clarify this for those of you that are not customers of National Asset Advisors. So they have a very elaborate servicing system that their customers have access to that is really an asset management system, and it's called AMX. It's the exact same system that we have, okay? And so that is the name of the software that AMX is the software that National Asset Advisors and their clients who are servicing clients are accessing. So they're showing you that the last document they showed you was a screenshot of that system, and it shows you how they communicate with you back and forth, and they'll refer to that as an action ticket.
Thanks, Eddie.
And that's pretty much the only thing that I think is exclusive to us. Everything else in here, if you're with a different servicer, I think it's all going to pertain. The only thing that's really different is that we use that AMX portal. next, we had delinquent taxes and just a couple comments on those. Delinquent taxes are always going to continue to accrue penalties. So the longer you choose not to pay them, the higher the taxes will ultimately be. And it's good to avoid tax sale unless you're accepting that strategic risk. It can be hard to redeem. It can be expensive to redeem. Stay out of tax sale if you can avoid it. Delinquent taxes require payment of all taxes at times. So some places will allow you just to go back and pay the old 14 and 15 taxes, but some areas are going to require you pay everything and sometimes even delinquent utilities at the same time. Redemption can also require the same kind of situation where you need to pay all taxes and all liens and a fee. And just keep in mind that delinquent taxes can draw negative attention from counties. If you have delinquent taxes, they might be looking harder at you for code violations and that sort of thing. Just something to keep in mind as you choose to pay or to not pay tax. And so, I hope that this is good information for y'all to have about penalties.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. This helps quite a bit, and it's nice to have you guys on tonight and kind of walk through this because, again, what we want to do is make sure that everybody that's on the call basically kind of puts a T-chart. And so everybody who's listening on the call, get a piece of paper, draw a line across, line down the middle. On one side, I want you to put escrow taxes. On the other side, put non-escrow taxes. With everything that Margaret and Mike are walking through, the assumption was that the taxes were escrowed in the payment when the original note was set up. And then they kind of walk through what's permissible and not permissible. They're also letting you know that it you've got to really look at this kind of by a county by county, municipality by municipality basis, where there may be some times where you may have to pay a little more than anticipated just because that's the way that municipality or county works. And then the last part of the puzzle really is, and this goes to Mike and Margaret, if we have a situation where we have a student that has a performing note where the taxes were not set up initially to be escrowed, what different procedures do they need to do to make sure they can go ahead and keep those taxes out of going into tax foreclosure, et cetera, et cetera. So if they pay them, what kind of is their recourse? Is it something that they can't recoup those funds until the note pays off, or is there a way to go ahead and reach out, possibly modify the loan and set up escrows, et cetera? So if you guys can kind of walk through that, that would be great.
Go ahead, Mark.
We would initially start by reviewing the contract that you do have to see what it allows. There are some instances where maybe we get a loan that transfers into us that is not escrowed, but the contract does allow it. If it does, then we can go ahead, make calculations, figure out what escrow should be, get in touch with the borrower, notify them what's happening, and we can establish escrow there if it's already in the contract. If for some reason it's not in the contract and the taxes are not being paid, that's a conversation to have with the borrower. I think that if they're paying their note, they'd want to go ahead and make sure that their taxes are taken care of to protect their interest in the property. And they'll probably be able to work with you on some sort of arrangement.
So like anything else, Margaret, what you're basically saying is by maintaining good communication with your servicer and reaching out to the borrower and maintaining communication with them, at the end of the day, you can pretty much kind of work through any issue that may pop up.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect world, but this is kind of the reason we thought this was such a timely subject. If people ask me, all things being equal, would I kind of rather have a note that was serviced and had escrow than not? Probably the case. Now, if I'm buying a note that's seasoned, the taxes are paid, the insurance is paid when I buy it, you know, they're taking care of business, right?
You know, they're taking care of business, right? They're taking care of
Somebody's got me on speakerphone.
Hit the audio option there, Eddie, and go to phone. We're getting twice as much Eddie tonight for the same price. I like it.
I don't understand what the problem is.
Yeah.
It's echoing, huh?
Not anymore.
Yeah,
okay.
There you go.
All right. So I want to go through and kind of waterfall these questions here and stuff. But the answer is, you know, I don't want any of you that want to buy performing notes that are paying with a good pay history. I don't want you freaking out one way or another. It has escrow. It doesn't have escrow. It's got a negative balance. And I got to write a check for $800. I'm just telling you the scope of a guy that's been doing this for damn near 40 years. Just don't outthink the deal. I mean, we're trying to explain to you how it works so that when your servicer says, okay, they got an escrow shortage, you got to write a check, or you got to do this with it, you know, and sometimes, you know, people have too much escrow in their account and the account's current. And by law, you can ask the customer if he'd like to apply the extra money to his balance, but you can't just automatically do it. Am I right, Margaret?
That's right. The escrow funds are there, so if they would like the refund back, we have to send them the refund back.
Listen, these servicers know what the law is. And so when they're telling you we can't do it, they're saying it because they're trying to protect you as the owner of the note so that you don't fall under any kind of a penalty or you get spanked financially because you weren't following the law. And I can tell you this from a lot of experience that these types of notes, you get a little bit of a mush factor with this escrow stuff. But you know, I mean, most of the notes we buy are escrowed. The biggest percent of the notes you're going to see are escrowed, not 100%. And you're going to say, well, I only want this or I only want that. And we've already had excessive conversations about you over-filtering your investments, right? You look through 100 notes and you can't find one you'd buy, and we bought all 100 of them. Something's wrong with that picture, right? So Kevin, I just want to, before we get these guys off the phone tonight, I want to kind of clean up the questions here.
Sure.
Did we get everything?
Yeah, let's see here. Redemption with Tanya. Basically, Tanya, redemption means that you have to pay the taxes after they go on a sale, so the foreclosure can't proceed and the tax deed can't be issued. Bob Bollinger is wondering if there is a list of states that are saying you can add utilities into back taxes. Bob, that's really going to be a county by county thing. I'm going to share with you, Bob, that there are a couple of resources you can use. Number one, Netter Online is a good thing, and then also ProTitle has got some information, and then also one of the vendors on our site, Safeguard Properties, keeps everybody up to speed on lien status in different states. So that's
right, again, so, the member study. All right, so Moore, repeat the first one again.
All right, so Netter Online, so NETRONLINE, and that is on the student mentoring website, so Netter Online. Second one is ProTitle. One of the things they do in their searches is they actually can do a municipal lien search for you, and they will let you know if municipal liens can be added in. And then lastly, Safeguard Properties, which is one of the vendors on the mentoring website, they also have got a very, very good database where you can kind of scroll through, and they have got it set up almost, it's very similar to the hardest hit funds spreadsheet that Kevin Shortell built, where with Safeguard Properties, you can go in and actually click onto a state and then drill it down, and it'll let you know what is permissible and not.
Okay.
Yep. So it's
right, so Margaret, anything else to kind of wrap this up? I want to make sure we've got the questions for you, and just kind of as we've talked through this, did you get to talk about everything you meant to?
Those are the big questions that we get. How do you get the funds back if you have to cover the taxes? How often are they due? How many municipalities do you need the bill? Yes, your servicer always wants the bill. I think these are the main points, and I think that this will be a great help, and I hope that you guys found it useful.
I think you did a great job. Mike, thanks for being on and kind of co-piloting there. Susan, I want to make sure to send the questions to Margaret and Mike so that they can kind of see the questions. And if you're going to be on the Tuesday call tomorrow, I think we'll probably run a little bit through more of a condensed version. But as you guys know, sometimes some of this stuff we take a swing at on the performing and non-performing because it's such a common subject. So you guys did a great job. Great presentation, by the way. I thought your presentation was so good that Susan has made this available, and you're going to be able to download their PowerPoint slides and have a PDF of it.
They're attached under handouts.
Yep. Great job, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. We ready for round two, Susan?
Yeah. Is Kevin going to be on here? I'm not seeing him.
Okay.
He'll pop in. You got to have confidence in your Kevins. Just saying.
So, Eddie, what would you like to do? You want to roll with that PowerPoint?
I want to make sure Kevin's here. I don't want to go through the fire drill and he's not here. I had the impression that he was. Has he got his hand up? Did
nope.
You send him a PIN number?
No, I don't see him anywhere.
Did an alien get him?
Let's talk a little bit about what Kevin sent us. Can we look at that? Can we look at his? I don't want the PowerPoints yet. I just want to go to what he put up as his question. Do you have that available, Susan?
I do.
Yeah. Okay, no worries. So Kevin's had some logistical issues. He's got family that's been in the hospital, so he's profusely telling me, "Hey, man, I'm sorry. I'm trying to deal with this." I think he's going to be on. But let's go through and kind of raise this. If he's not going to be on tonight, this is probably something we're going to cover next Monday night. Okay, so either way, it's a good prep, and if not, more, we move on.
We can do that.
All right, so Moore, let's go through this. What's he saying here?
All right, hold on one second. I'm going to pop it up because I had taken my eyes off the screen for a second. All right. So are you seeing management fees come from no funds or percentage structure offerings? All right, so what Kevin is doing, Eddie, is he is basically asking some very, very good questions in terms of if I'm going to go ahead and set up a investment fund, what is kind of normal and customary in the market right now, and what would I do if I was going to go ahead and attract investors to my fund? So let's just make the assumption that what Kevin's looking to do is set up kind of what we call a private placement memorandum, where he's going to go ahead and put together an LLC and then bring investors in, and then they're going to go ahead and buy assets.
Yeah, and I think the question is whether he does, you know, a PPM, or does he structure it differently? $500,000, as he alluded to there, is not really big enough to go do a PPM. You can't pay the legal fees. There's other ways you can do it with limited investors. And so there is a plan B. I am sorry about this, guys. I don't know. Kevin was all good to go. I had a lot of communication with him right before the call, and I don't know where he's at.
That's okay. So, Eddie, I'll tell you what. You bring up a very, very good nugget, because the last 3 weeks we've been working a lot with the students on the calls, and also at the 3 days, where we've got a lot of students that have got investors that are really, really interested in putting money into their businesses, and everybody has a lot of good questions. And to your point, where you go, you know, maybe $500,000 isn't enough to go into a pool, that doesn't mean that you don't want to work with those investors. You never say no to an investor if they have the checkbook out and they got the pen ready to go. But it's more of understanding what is the right entity.
You can do a JV. You can do an LLC where there are investors in the LLC. You can do a limited partnership, mm-hmm. or you can take it to a different level, and you can do a private placement memorandum, a PPM. Now, our capital fund is $100 million capital fund. Okay, so we have a PPM. It's quite expensive to start that. It's honestly about $40,000. And so unless you're going to gather a lot of money, and it's expensive in the administration, but it's the right thing to do if you're going to raise a whole lot more money. So we'll do a waterfall with Kevin next week, Kevin Moan. It's a great question, and I'm sorry we had all ready to go here, and we just have lost connectivity with Kevin, so we're going to move home.
It happens. It happens. It happens. So
we'll redeem it next week, and then Kevin, are you ready to go with an asset?
You know, Mr. Speed, I appreciate your concern in me having an asset ready to roll.
All right, Susan, so, you girl, you get it. You know, I mean, it's like
gotta move. Gotta move.
All right. Susan, get that Google car fueled up and idling in the driveway.
All right, let's talk about it.
All right, so what I want to do is I want to go ahead and I want to kind of carry through a conversation that you and I have been having a lot of fun with over the past 3-4 weeks. And again, this is all part of strategy, and this also has to do with keeping your filters too tight, or not being able to really find the gold, it kind of in the backyard. So there is an asset on the performing side. It is asset number 57630, and it is in beautiful Dayton, Ohio. And I want to use this one, Eddie, just to follow up on one of the conversations that you had, you and I had a couple weeks ago, where the note balance appears to be more than the value of the property. And is that necessarily a deal killer? And I know, Eddie, one of the things that we have talked about in passing is kind of also evaluating what is my true at-risk money, et cetera, et cetera. I know we've got a calculator in there. But for tonight, I think let's kind of run through the nuts and bolts, and let's really put the story together. So let me see what you've got up here, Susan, because I've got you closed. All right. So, Eddie, let's look at this. When we look at this on the surface, we're looking at a solid brick ranch that is in Dayton, Ohio. Okay, so we're talking working class neighborhood in Dayton, which is one of the nation's largest aviation hubs. Eddie, my personal preference is I love brick ranches because they're easy to rehab. If you ever have something that you got to rehab, I love brick ranches. This is a note that was done back in January of 2016. So we've got about 14 months worth of seasoning on this. The original note was put together at 13.5. We've got a BPO that's in the file.
Oh, wait, say that again, Moore. You said
38.5.
Okay, you said a different number, I think. Okay, make that a little bigger, Susan, if you can, please enlarge that. So we, what did Moore say the other night? We have experience eyes. Yeah,
you got to set it to experience eyes mode. Look at that. The newbie investors can see that. Eddie, you and I, we got to go to about the 135 to make that. You know,
exactly.
There you go. All right. So the note was done in January 2016. Right now, principal balance is about $36,965, and we're showing a BPO of about $20,000. Note rate 7.9 is 360 months, and we got about 341 payments remaining. So let's go ahead, Susan. Let's scroll down, and let's build the story out. So the first thing we're going to do is let's go ahead and let's look at the BPO. Again, the BPO is one of the variables we look at. But also remember, there's times where we're using the BPO to set a filter that is keeping them from not being able to do deals. So, Eddie, they're telling us that this property is worth about $10,500 on a 30-day sale. There also is no income approach on this one, I do not believe. So how many of these houses would you like to buy, Eddie, at $10,000 a pop?
Well, it's, you know, people have heard this argument from me so much. You know, I look at it from an executive level. I look at it and think, well, really, should we even put the BPO in there?
Right.
It makes it look bad. And so we got to go figure out what the house is really worth, because the realtor damn sure don't know what it's worth.
Right. And again, guys, we're here, we're using this asset to illustrate strategies and then also to teach you the critical points of deal review and analysis.
Is there anything on this BPO that means anything?
My favorite part was that they said this property was overimproved for the neighborhood, but it was built 60 years ago.
Okay. Well, it's okay if you guys want to see comps and look at all that. Does it really matter?
Eddie, what they're saying was it's overimproved. You can tell that the
I want to ride down the street.
You want to go, Susan?
I want to ride
in that Google car. What I looked at is he said it's in need of no repairs. I looked at the three comps and I said, okay, let's go. And then I decided we use a little thing called the income approach to figure out what we really got to work with, just in case.
Well, I'm all just right. Pulling that up. What is the income approach on it? What's it say? What's this thing rent for?
So I went in, I did an updated rent-a-meter, and 650 is a very, very conservative approach. So 650 be very conservative. Taxes. Taxes are 150, insurance is 40. So coming in super conservative, we're going to be fine.
When we look at the Troya, what's the safety of the neighborhood going to look like?
I actually had not popped up before we got there. I figured because there was a school and a cemetery in the neighborhood, it should be pretty good.
Okay.
Look, they recycle. There's a recycle.
All right, so is our house on the left or the right?
Should be on the left.
All right, where the white sled there is?
Yep. We call that a minivan. You're not used to seeing the back covered up.
Yeah, no, it's we got a we're not quite situated. Is that it?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so let's ride down the street. I can see this neighborhood's gonna scare the hell out of me. That's a joke, everybody. By the way, I was joking.
Eddie, we can pick out the nearest ammo store.
Yeah, this thing is scaring the dog crap out of me. Oh my God! I think I just saw a drug deal. Go back, Susan. I think I just saw him doing a drug deal right there at the Google car.
All right, Eddie. That might be iced tea sitting at the lemonade stand again. You got to watch out for that.
All right. So has everybody got this? I get it. Maybe it's not the smartest thing in the world to do to put a 20,000 RBPO in the file. We had one. We put it in there. But if that's what you're going to make your investment decision on, you're not a note buyer.
So the map is a little interesting.
Yeah, so it gets ratty behind you. This is a good pocket, obviously, and it gets a little ratty behind you.
Okay.
You know why you knew it was going to be good, Susan?
Why?
It was a school.
Yeah.
There's four schools within walking distance. So, all right. So, again, we'll go through it. In terms of Trulia, there's a little bit of color. It's intriguing, but, again, I see more green than anything else. Also, remember, guys, with Trulia, that zip code not necessarily going to be what's happening on that block. We also know with this asset that the BPO is artificially low simply because we have two components. We have cash sales are going to be our comps. So, Eddie, what I did is I took the liberty of suggesting that we kind of look at NOI, because if I'm looking at this as a performing note investor where right now pay history is solid, If I went through my strategies of if I had to take the property back, what would I do? And this also is done on a land contract. What would I do? The first thing I'd look at is what would be my highest and best use? And if I got this property back, highest and best use at this point probably would be to go rental, because it's a three-bedroom.
Do you think it would fit the turnkey model?
I'm about 2 minutes away from making that decision, but I would tell you I have a high probability of saying yes.
All right. I mean, you're looking at the crime, so you see the deal.
Yep.
I assume that you're going to want to pull a calculator up here and run some numbers.
Let's go ahead and let's just look at that. How did that happen so fast?
This woman is magic.
Look at this. She's just got the pixie dust.
Magic.
She's got the pixie dust on the keyboard this evening, Eddie. I like this.
Susan, right, let's start popping it in.
650. 150 on taxes. Let's go 40 on insurance. And then management fee, let's go 80. Should take you, you put too much pixie dust. Take other, take that 90 out of there.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right, so if we run the income approach, the house is worth about 45, which I didn't even need a calculator to know that.
Right. Yep.
So guess what? The realtor and their cash comps are basically irrelevant. And if that's going to be the sword you're going to fall on, you're going to miss this deal.
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
Yep. And again, guys, this is just strategy where we want to double check everything, make sure that you're not putting too tight of a filter on a deal where look at the collateral, look at the highest and best use, look at the market, look at the dynamics, and go, all right, does this fit my risk parameters? In terms of, let's say, I think price on this is what, 27? If you look at the discount, Eddie, this note, let's see, there is principal balance.
What's the yield on it? The yield has to be good.
Yield is going to be over 11. And titanium price on this is 28, diamonds 29, principal balance is 37. You want to go ahead and give us the...
What's the coupon rate?
7.9.
Okay.
You want to run this through the partial and do a little math?
Well, I mean, here's the deal. There's a million ways to make this deal work. Right. What somebody's got to get over in this case is it's got a low BPO.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. Mm-hmm. We're not, so guess what? The BPO's low. It's never going to change. As far as we can go do the lottery and go finally find a realtor to go do it. But what does the BPO really tell you anyway? Susan, you've been an REO agent, haven't you?
Yeah, for about 8 years now.
Okay, so this is a real dicey deal because I'm basically saying that the real estate agent that did the BPO doesn't know what they're doing.
I agree.
Okay. You wouldn't have agreed before you went to note school.
That is correct. I would have done the same thing that agent did and look at the what we would call a fire sale price.
Because if you're saying it's worth 20 grand, who's going to buy it? Who's the only person that could buy it?
An investor.
And the comps they're running, are those houses fixed or as is?
As is, cash prices.
And the comps they're running, are those in those buyers getting financing or they're paying cash?
They're cash buyers.
Okay, so you have a cash buyer buying as-is properties, and that's the only thing the realtor's got in MLS to compare it to. And I'm not saying the realtor's crazy. I'm just saying if they do a BPO for the bank, that's the number they make them come back with. But if you sell it under that technique, you're completely giving it away. I mean, you've been REO agent for 8 years. Is that house a piece of junk, Susan?
No, that's a nice looking house to me.
I got it. It's where working people live. Okay? I know it may not be the house that a lot of you guys live in. It is where working people live. And there's nothing wrong with it. I've ridden God knows how many neighborhoods. I've ridden as many as more than you have. Susan, trust me.
Okay. I believe it.
And I can start riding down that street, and I really didn't care what the Trulia map said. Okay? I know what dicey looks like. That is not a dicey neighborhood. Okay, I get it. A few blocks away it may be or whatever, but that doesn't mean this is. You know, and the reason instinct told me up front that it was going to be that way is because I had the deal. You can pull the partial deal in here and plug the numbers real quick. Go ahead and do it just so everybody can see it. Morris, you need some bullets here.
All right, let me hit you up with some bullets. And sorry, I'm laughing because I'm looking across the street, and across the street there is a park with tennis courts, football court, and a soccer court. Sorry, I'm moving myself in, Eddie.
Oh, in the house?
Yeah.
There were no board ups on the street anywhere, nowhere around it.
Yeah, no, this. Sorry, I get my deal architect hat on. I'm like, woohoo, let's play with this one. All right, so here's what we know. This note, so let's just assume 28,000 is the purchase price. 7.9 is the note rate. Estimated payments remaining 341.
Okay, wait a minute now. The balance of the note is not 28.
No, balance of note is 37,965. Sorry, I'm looking at the – I'm in notes direct reading off the label. I'm not looking.
All right, so what's the remaining term?
It was 341.
All right. All right. So the note costs 28, 29. Put 29 in there. Yep. And why don't you just plug in 180 months? Well, plug in the remaining term, 341. And so it's 11 yield. And that's another thing. People getting drunk on yield. Okay? You're buying this note basically 70 cents on the dollar. I don't give a crap if the yield's – so click your chart. I don't care if the yield's 11 or 13 and a half. You see that orange? You got a long way for that bad boy to pay off early to earn that extra discount. So, I mean, look at the orange. You go 10 years out, you still got a big wide orange band. The note pays off early, you earn unearned discount. I would rather buy a 30-year note at 11 yield than a 5-year note at a 15 yield. And that I can tell you with 1,000% integrity.
Yep.
All right. Susan, come back. Let's go to your input screen. Just figure you're going to sell a partial. Okay. So go sell 144 months. Sell 180. All right, so if you had a passive investor at a tick over an 8 yield, and you could do 200 months, it doesn't matter. You're just playing the early payoff game. It's $10,000 discount in this deal. All right, click your chart. There you go. God almighty. Orange, 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 orange. All right, so just for the hell of it, go take your input screen and go click in there. Go click in there 200 months, 220 months. All right, now you got a 9.5 yield. It doesn't matter. You're just playing the early payoff game. You're just playing the fact that you know it's going to pay off early, and that orange is yours. The blue is what the investor is still entitled to. Okay. More. This is a good asset.
Yes.
It has some hair on it.
Yep.
And an amateur passes on this deal. I get that. And what we're trying to do is to take people from an amateur status to a professional status. And the only way we can show them how to do it is we've got to show them some borderline deals that a lot of people pass and that I wouldn't pass. I would buy this deal in New York Minute. Well, wait a minute. I already did buy it.
Too late. You already bought it. And Eddie, you're exactly right. So the reason I highlighted this asset was to get everybody focused back on strategies where – we want everybody to think like an investor and also think as a investor where you need to have inventory, you need to have deals ready to go, because when you have an investor come to you and say, hey, I've got $20,000 to spend or $25,000 to spend or whatever, this is where you analyze a deal and go, okay, the collateral really more realistically is probably worth this. And then because there's such a good discount between the unpaid principal balance, what you can buy the note for, and then the payments remaining, this deal becomes a very, very strong deal. And that's what we want you to look at. We always want you to be thinking of, if I can have deals in my inventory, all I have to be able to do is articulate the strong points of the deal to the investor. You're not selling it. You're letting them see how the cash flow works for them. And Eddie, what were our rate of returns on this? High eights? Or so we're what, eights to nines? So
you,
this
give an investor at nine. All right, yeah. So let's blow through some questions here, Kevin. All right, so somebody says there's missing documents. Well, if you want to buy it and there's missing documents, then you go on the portal of Notes Direct and see why it's got missing documents. I don't know why that is tonight, but I'm just saying that that shouldn't be a reason somebody doesn't buy it, because there's a good connection system to do it.
Right. And actually, Eddie, I would disagree that there's missing documents on this.
Anyway.
Eddie, they are in the – everything's in the pro title report.
What's up with all the zeros on the new sub-performing notes? I don't know. Is that related to the asset we're looking at, or is that right. Something else?
No, that's a pay history thing. We're not worried about that. And to your point, if you look at the pro title report, 99% of the documentation you need to do your due diligence on this deal is in the report. Guys, this is a very, very clean file. So there's not a ton of paperwork.
Yeah. Yeah. He says we must like the Denver Broncos because we like orange and blue. You damn right we do.
There you go.
All right. Let's wrap it up. This is a good asset. Good example. Listen, guys, don't ever buy any asset you're not comfortable with. But I'm saying the note buyer in me has bought lots and lots of assets like this. And the reason is because the BPO is not a fair assessment of what the house is really worth. Oh, yeah, you can call an REO agent. If you decide to give it away, you can give it away. But I hopefully you guys don't hang out with us all this time to decide you're going to go give it away with an REO agent. Okay. How many of you would call your local realtor to go look at a local fix and flip house for you? Huh? I mean, if you had a fix and flip house in your backyard, how many of you would call your local realtor to have them go look at it for you?
Nobody.
Nobody I know. I don't know a professional real estate investor in America that would do it that's seasoned. So if you wouldn't do it in your backyard, why would you go do it in Dayton, Ohio? Just saying.
You got it.
All right, got a couple classes coming up. Raleigh, May 5th through the 7th. And then we got a class coming up, and, of course, it's going to tie in with Summer Summit. You guys are – if you haven't registered for Summer Summit, you got to register. Bob came and met with me today. Says, look, the registrations are down. We know they're coming, but they're not registered yet. And it's just hard for us to run a business and go do the – prepare for everything when you guys don't register. So I'm going to plead to you tonight, okay? Be professional. If you know you're coming to Summer Summit, go register. Let it help us. Don't give us, you know, the 911 just because you just, oh, I don't know, I just didn't get to it. Get to it. Okay, please. I beg you. And Summer Summit's going to be the best content. I swear to you. I swear to you that it's gonna be the best. It's gonna be the best summer content we ever had. Okay, we're doing a little video. We're gonna send out to you guys that are registered for Summer Summit. We're gonna tell you about a charity thing. It's a dinner at my house. It's a real limited deal. There's only about four couples left that can register. And if you do it, consider it. It's very nice. It is for charity, so it's a great cause. And But Martha filmed it yesterday. We had a little party at our house, so our house was all kind of decorated up pretty cool. And Martha filmed it yesterday, and we'll send that out to you guys that are registered. If you hadn't registered for Summer Summit, you're coming, and you need to come.
Hey, Eddie, so somebody just said that, we should put on the website who is registered because we might think we've registered and you don't have us. So there, you do get a confirmation email. When you register, you should get a confirmation email. If you didn't get that, you're not registered.
We ain't never going to print a list of who's registered, so that ain't going to happen. Okay? If you're – I hate to tell you to do this because I hate to overload my staff. If you're like, think you meant to register and you're not registered – I guess send it to info@noteschool.com and just have them do a quick check. And if 25 of you do it, I'm going to choke you. Okay? But if somebody's really right down to it and they're just pretty sure they've registered, then once again, as you said, Susan, you're going to get a confirmation. It's good. But okay? We get all our questions answered?
We did.
All right, cool. Great night. We had to switch around a little bit here, but it turned out to be a good night. And Moore, you did a great job of finding an asset that really was a great, you know, mind twist of how we look at the business. And I think it was a really good example. That long-term note, has got some real juice in it. I'm telling you, it does. All right. You guys have a great night.
Thank you, Eddie.
You bet. Bye-bye.